20s, late 20s, whatever. And nobody I ever knew when I was in my 20s ever was spoke as with such inanity and had and was such so given to body orifice humor. You know, I mean, you guys talk the way I people I know talk.
Yeah.
Which is in the in today's realm is pretty unusual. Which is why I like the film so much, because it just doesn't. Why? I mean, why do your contemporaries all feel that the way to go if you're doing it is to kind of, you know, emphasize the horrendous embarrassments and the mortifying emotions and oh my God, I screwed up and I, you know, farted during our first time and you know that kind of humor, which is rampant in this industry. So, and no doubt you chewed this over when you were writing it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Knowing also that, of course, that's what's more commercial. Obviously, they like that stuff. So.
Well, it certainly gets willed into existence, you know, like the power of the marketing machine is so strong that something that's even not that great can really end up turning into something that's significant, or at least temporarily, in American culture. I mean, in our case, we didn't have to answer to anybody, so I feel like that we really benefited from that. You know, I was trying to get this movie made in the studio system, but we all knew each other from Austin, Texas, and so we had made two films on the streets there, and so we were very comfortable with one another and kind of had a good creative workflow.
Yeah, we trusted you like tremendously because we'd all worked before the last 2 years.
Yeah, and then but you know, in the studio system, there's so much front end work, and in these. These people who are giving you notes, they're like, who the fuck are these people?
You know, like...
What?
You make fun of them?
What?
You make fun of the yellow sugar? Do you take Splenda?
Splenda.
The yellow sugar. It's okay. Oh, that's
I don't,
No?
No sugar. Thanks.
But there's a tremendous amount of front-end work, you know, in getting your studio, in getting your thing, in getting money, right? You have to do, has to be pitch perfect on the page, and people have to, you know, 10 different people with different opinions get to comment until they feel like it's ready to be made. And so, you know, I feel only natural that it's going to dilute the film in a way where, you know, in this case, and I went through that very long process of even taking out that last script, and it took a year by the time your agents feel like it's ready to take out, and you wait 3 weeks for them to give you notes, and they're just ridiculous notes. And so in this case, it was like, you know, my studio deal had fallen through, and so I was like really extremely depressed and was able to kind of very quickly put all the deep, real details of my life and my friends' lives on the page. And so, as a result, you know, we went from this idea that we had talked about for 2 years, like, man, we got to make one on the streets of L.A. and kind of capture the interesting things that we're seeing here. And Sarah and I had walked over all over downtown and found all these amazing theaters. And, you know, really my life had fallen apart completely. It went from, you know, where you're in a circle of friends that are pretty supportive, and you have at least some semblance of self-respect. You feel okay, even though you're poor and you're making, you know, working two jobs. You're at least like writing on the side and like, you know, picking up jobs, writing for the weekly, and writing on your projects that you hope to make. Just as everybody else is, you're not like defined by the fact that I'm delivering chicken or whatever it may be. And so, when you come out here, it was the expenses are so high that it was just a very difficult transition.
How much higher are expenses here compared to Austin?
Well, you get paid more. So even like the most simple retail job, you're at least going to make $10 an hour, normally $10 an hour plus tips. And then, you know, going out to dinner is dirt cheap. You know, you could have a beer is like $3.
Exactly.
As opposed to $8. So just having normal, you know, everyday expenses in life, just going out to dinner, that kind of stuff is, you can have an existence there and be able to engage with friends in this way that you
that was a good shot with you talking and you looking out the window. You mind if I get that?
Yeah. He's used to that. I'm talking, he's zoning out. He's like,
yes. Yeah, you're doing a wide, okay.
I'll just wait for him to stop talking.
All right, here we go. One.
All right, so I'm going to continue talking.
I'd like to talk.
All right, two more. I like that profile. One, two.
So then we will.
And one, two, three. Okay. I'll
that's great. Well, you're chucking.
So I was thinking, I was talking to Mickey about the three things that I had speed bumps with.
Yeah.
I thought that'd be fun to get a speed bump.
Oh, great, sure.
I've already done the nice stuff.
Start with the negative, yes.
All right. So here's my favorite ending of, you know, I want to see you again, do you want to see me again? And it's in Only Angels Have Wings. Ever see that? Cary Grant. Gene Arthur says, do you want me to stay, Jeff? All you got to do is ask me. And he won't ask it. Because I'll tell you what, I'll flip you for it. Can't you stay, tail me? No, just, that's not going to do it. I just ask me, do you want to, you know, flip it anyway, flip. Heads, okay, you're staying, right? No, that's not it. I want you to ask me. Well, I'll see you. Kisses her goodbye, takes off in the plane.
You can't ask her.
Huh?
You can't ask her.
Not in the code, you can't do it. You can't say. He's off in the plane. She looks at the coin. Two-headed coin.
Oh, I love that.
That's brilliant.
So that's, you know, yeah. That's nice. Now, in the movie, I mean, it's not, and now if you have had a, let's say, something that's really intense and passionate, sexual, perhaps, but it's been very much of a kind of an inner rumble thing, I could say, saying, I don't know if that's going to be anything more than that, because that was almost like something stronger than me. It wasn't really thought through, felt through. Or I could see her saying, you saying, maybe, you know, and him, you going, yeah.
Okay, I can do that. Yeah.
Maybe that's, okay. I mean, I'm not, you know, taking any insurances, but... but the just a flat out no, I didn't. It felt wrong. I didn't agree to that because they've been through too much. It wasn't just, you know, there's a lot of stuff. Standing up, you know, the ex-boyfriend, all that stuff.
Well, here's my thinking on that.
Did you go around on that ending?
No, it was always exactly like that. It never changed.
It never changed.
Yeah, I love it because to me. What she does, I mean, you can look at it in several different ways, but the way I look at it is that it's a heroic thing on her part, because I feel like she does like this guy. She is in a bit of trouble, you know, being knocked up, being at that point in your life, age-wise, where you're like, I have to give up this career, like, I can't do this, especially now that I'm pregnant. And so many women I know are going through that, or have gone through that, or get to that age where they... realize they're going to have to sacrifice having kids if they want to stick it out and try to, like, you know, either make it in LA or continue doing this creative process, because typically there's so much emphasis put on beauty for women that once they get pregnant, in that brief period when they're so young and like going to either break or not, it's really devastating. So it creates this amazing amount of anxiety in spite of all the talent that may or may not be there. But the emotions are very real. So given that I've kind of witnessed this happen with so many people that I care about that are here, that are putting their lives into, you know, acting and training and acting in films and auditioning and going through all of those roller coasters and then putting out all the realities out of their mind. To me, Vivian is doing that in a way. And at this point has been kind of blocking them out in order to, like, try to engage in it in a way where she's in control. So I'm going to set up this date. I'm going to create the parameters where I'm in control because everything in her life is out of control. And then when she ends up finally breaking down and connecting with him so emotionally, she's at this point where she has to decide, am I going to stay? I'm going to have an abortion and I'm going to try to do this and live with the repercussions, or I'm going to go home and give up and feel like I never gave it a shot and feel regret for this. But then she has, like, this such an intimate moment with him where she sees a guy that stands up for her, that does go back into her house and does these kind of heroic things in her life, that it kind of restores her faith in humanity. And I feel like in a very depressive state, which I was certainly in to begin with in this project, it was sometimes you look at the world through very depressed eyeglasses, and everything you see is just the downfall of humanity, and you think, God, we have no hope. Like, humanity is worthless. Like, we're going to kill each other in the end, what's the point? Like, it's very easy to kind of look in the world in this very dark way and feel like there's no sense of hope. And you go out of your way to find evidence that kind of supports that. But then there's certain things that change your mind. You see somebody do something altruistic, like give the roses that he has nothing to gain, and just randomly gives roses to this person that he sees could use them. And it makes you feel like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we do have hope. Mm-hmm. And in a way, they give each other hope, and that's what's important. So when she's in the bathroom, to me, that's her deciding point. That's when she needs to decide. And I feel like she does. She says, I'm going to go back home, and I'm going to have this kid, and this will be a memory I have. At least I've been able to act out. Like, in a way, I feel like a lot of women want to get all the way to that point. And probably a lot of people in general, but certainly in my life, there's been a lot of women that want to get there, and they would like the idea that I could go out and sleep around, I could do this, but they just can't actually follow through and do this. And she's on the precipice of her life going in this direction that's totally different, where these kind of experiences are just going to be a memory, and she's very aware of that. So then standing there, having this experience, that's why she doesn't want to do it, but she forces herself to have sex, because she's like, I want to have this moment. And then she goes in, and she says goodbye. But she says goodbye in a way because she knows that she doesn't need to involve him in this whole mess. She's like, I'm going to go and I'm going to begin my life anew. And it is what it is. And thank you for being such a gentleman with me.
But I think it's also, even though she comes across extremely vulnerable and weak, I mean, she's obviously putting up this front, you know, that she's this powerful, in-control person. It is a front. And I think that vulnerability, you know, I think it's exactly right what he's saying. Like, most women like that in that situation, taking the chance with somebody like Wilson and saying everything's going to be great, maybe I will have this child and he and I will fall in love and he'll be a successful writer and I'll be an actress and we'll work together and live in Hollywood, this dream. I mean, the idea of that seems more absurd and more scary and so risk-taking. Then actually, it's easy to go home. It's easy to go back to Texas and live with mom and raise this child, because it's extremely hard to struggle in the city and you know, put your heart and soul and just let it get hit by a truck every single day in LA. And so I agree completely with the ending. And I think that also there's a line in the film that's like, you know, we're all holding on by a thread, just waiting for that thread to break. But every once in a while, somebody will come in your life and there'll be these moments that you really hold on to. For whatever reason, that moment you had with that person might get you through that day, that week, that hour, but it was there and it was meant for that to happen in your life, and everything happens for a reason. And I think Wilson coming into her life that moment, you know, even though it was a little forced on her part, it did happen and she created it, and it allowed her to continue on and make a decision. Because I think if she would have never had that date per se with Wilson and that wouldn't have happened, I think it would have been a completely different answer. But I think that connection with him gave her comfort in knowing that she's not as crazy as she thinks she is, and the world really is okay. And if she makes this decision, it's okay. It's okay to give up on this dream. It's okay to do this because this might be the right thing to do.
Yeah. Just sitting there, and you did go out with that asshole for 3 years. And you
right.
Say, no, still own, you know, in very simple terms.
Right.
This is a good thing. The other guy was, what?
But he's,
she gets back together. She doesn't get back together.
No, I don't think at all she gets back together with him. But I mean, you know, Wilson, I mean, he has a lot, I mean, he's, you know, he's at the end of the rope too, you know. I mean, he's definitely not.
I think these two people, like, met up and, like, had this parallel at this perfect point in time, that they actually both really needed what they each got from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the most realistic thing is, this is Los Angeles. People don't date. People are having these evenings every Friday and Saturday night, mm-hmm. like these great experiences with this other person, and you wake up the next morning sober or whatever, and it's done. It's gone.
Well, that happens.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what am I gonna
do? Oh my God! If I could just be with this girl, and the other girl's like, no, I gotta focus on the career. And regardless of whether or not pregnant. And I just felt like it was so
so true to the whole dating scene out here and the whole relationship scene out here that people just throw away like the greatest thing in their life right in front of them just to sacrifice yourself. So to succeed in the business, they say, you just have to be entirely selfish because it's so cutthroat and it's so demanding of one's time and everything that you just... You know, I thought that it really rang home that she leaves him in the end, you know, regardless from Wilson's character, his perspective of what he sees and why she's leaving, you know, but to me it was just like, I'd like to see you again. No. Mm. Of course no, like, I just had to ask, you know what I mean, like, hoping like she'd say yeah, but when she says no, it's totally accepted. Like, why would I be stupid enough to think that this could go further?
I think if the pregnancy, there wasn't a pregnancy,
possibly
different story, but you have this huge thing weighing on, like, pregnant. Like, what are you gonna be the father of my, you know, what the hell? What if I did get involved with him?
And I mean, I'm not even thinking you need to go that deep. Just the fact that, like, I want to see you again. Just, like, maybe grab lunch in a couple months. And her say no. Like, exactly.
Because
like
she's
said, I can't, I'm not gonna, you're not gonna get involved with me or with this. But I think they got what they needed from each other. She made the decision to have the baby and, like, lead this guy, which is exactly what she needed. And he made the decision, too, to, like, all right, okay, like, things aren't so bad in the city. I can move forward. I can go forward with life. With people aren't that bad. And so I think that's both exactly what they needed from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just two people's...
Yeah, sometimes timing doesn't, it's not, the timing's wrong, and you, even though your relationship may be perfect with this person and the chemistry is amazing, it's never going to work given the circumstances. But it doesn't diminish the relationships I've had that have been brief and yet important to me, especially in these times when everything is falling apart and you feel like, I'm a fucking worthless piece of shit. Like, there's no way. I don't know. I don't know if I could ever... I don't know if someone's going to be attracted to me anymore. Like, I'm fucking all... I've lost all my confidence.
Same here.
Like, there's those moments, and then there's times where...
I would recoil very, very strongly in the opposite direction if I were interested in you, theoretically, and I met the DP, the Texas asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd question that too.
I mean, it's not so much the coarse manner and that kind of, you know, I own you, you're mine, you know, but the threats, I'm going to rip your... I mean, that is like...
Well, this is the thing too, though. On the contrary,
yeah,
we come from
Texas. It's
we come all from Texas. And, like, whether that guy's serious or not, that's how people get irrational and pissed off in Texas. You say some stuff that... Like, you know.
That was a real conversation that Robert and I were sitting down, we overheard this guy talking to his girlfriend, and she was saying, you know, oh, I don't want you to come over. And he says, that's not funny, because I'm going to come over there and I'm going to kill you. And there's like this long pause, and then he's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
That's funny.
Like, it was crazy. That's how Robert put that into his first
movie. Should have put that in a film. That's
well,
good.
Robert put that into his first film, and he acted like
that. That kind of slipped out.
Yeah, so I feel like it's different, because it's funny, because we're like, well, he's from Beaumont. He really is from Beaumont.
Yeah, I mean, every single person that's from Texas at least knows one guy that's like that.
And he was probably drinking whiskey that night, for sure.
And people are, as backwards as it is, there is this old-fashioned and really ugly sense of ownership and this really misogynistic type guys and these weird dynamics. And I feel like I've ran into so many relationships where I'm like, how the fuck are you two together? Like, this is so... So I've just stopped judging relationships in general, because I'm like, they're all on the sand.
It feels like all the men that have great women in Texas are all cheating on them. I mean, like, yeah, I go home, all my high school friends are all married. Great wives. I mean, great wives. And they're all running around on fucking hookers, and I'm just like, it is such an odd mentality.
It is bizarre.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's always been like that, but, like, I mean, growing up, I'm now experiencing, I guess, because I get into that age.
Mm.
And I guess Dallas is at a place right now as far as, like, industry and that it's just everybody's out of control. So, I mean, it's, you know, they look at Los Angeles out here and they're like, oh, you guys are, you know,
doing cocaine every night, going to strip clubs.
Cocaine's huge in Houston and Dallas.
Yeah,
right now.
And they think that I'm not, like, partying my ass off every night. I go home to Texas and I look at them and I'm like, you guys are fucking out of control. You know, like, I'm going to bed at noon. At midnight. I'm having dinners usually on Thursday and Friday nights at someone's house and having wine, maybe getting stoned here and there, but you guys have it all backwards. You know, don't get me wrong, it happens out here. People, you know, I was a part of that whole scene for a while, but, like, looking at them, it's just like, they're just out of control.
You know, I know some other Austin natives. I know a guy who's written for Majors is an Austin native. Nobody has a Texas accent in Austin.
Yeah. I'm from Dallas.
It's
mostly, the accent's so subtle, like right in the middle of Houston, right in the middle of Austin, right in the middle of Dallas. The accents really come the further out you get.
Yeah.
You know, when I go home, I can hear a light hint of an accent, and I probably pick it up too.
Yeah, I hear a lot, like when I'm around my family, I'll pick up certain words that I hear, like, what did you say?
The second I get back to Los Angeles, I'll lose it in the dance too.
Robert has, that's really how it sounds.
Both your character and Mickey, your publisher, both felt that blowing off the heavy set guy we met earlier was curt and maybe a little hurtful and indicated it. I don't think that that's unfair if you're meeting somebody cold. I mean, you know, all's fair. I mean, love and war, you know, it's harsh. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, I don't feel it. You know,
I mean,
that's basically all you say to him. I don't think there's anything so awful about that. Just straight from the shoulder. You know, no offense.
It's more just like an objective view where it's like, well, he's not having it this time, and it's really an awful moment. But then next year, he'll have his moment, and the other people are. It's just this endless cycle of people finding one another, having their heart broken, feeling lonely.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's his turn to have that
whenever I've been successful or lucky or whatever you want to call it with someone, I've known it is going to happen within 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that I'm guaranteed. It means that the light is green, and if you, there's 117 ways you can blow it, screw it up. But when the light is green, I know it right away.
You know, when you've made a connection, when something's there, and
All right.
But I mean, me personally, I mean, I don't know if I could say that to somebody's face like that. First of all, I, Sarah, would not be interviewing people to date. Like, that's just not me, but...
Because you just sleep with everyone.
Right.
Like,
I think it is harsh and it's sad. I think she's a little more gentle with him. There's something about her.
Gentle?
Well, she's more feisty with Wilson. I mean, because she sees that with Wilson.
He can take it.
So I think she lets him down in an okay way.
I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of the tall, really tall actor.
Brian McGuire.
Yeah.
He's a piece of work.
I always kind of like scratch my head a little bit when I see someone who's like 6'9" and a girlfriend who's like 4'11".
I mean,
he's on his knees proposing to her, and he's taller than her.
His real girlfriend. I mean, Brian's 6'7".
Yeah.
And his real girlfriend is about
6'7"?
No, I don't think so. 6'5".
6'5". And his real girlfriend is about 4'4". I mean, 5'4".
Oh, really?
Yeah. 5'2".
5'2".
Mm-hmm.
Really short.
But see, I'm attracted to tall guys like that. Like, and I'm small. I mean, I'm 5'2", 5'3".
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
You mean more so than, say, someone who's more your size?
Yeah.
Taller definitely doesn't. Okay.
But most people are taller than me, so I guess it's okay.
Still on a numerical. Well, how many short guys have you slept with? How many tall guys have you slept with?
It's about equal.
About 100, equal.
100.
100.
Yeah.
Now, why didn't you... I could feel things brewing, obviously, with your roommate's girlfriend, fiance, and I thought, well, something's going to happen here, and it didn't. So you obviously just wanted to be atypical and just leave it alone, but you could see that there was obviously discord and something horrible that could happen.
Well, I think enough happens to where it's about Wilson's point of view, and it's about kind of them being foils for one another, like. he's this guy who's idealizing love, right? Romanticizes the idea of being with somebody, and is just in a very lonely place. So he sees his girl, his best friend with this girl, and just sees them having their companionship, and he just longs for that. And so, of course, by the end, you know, she's shown that she would betray her, you know, her lover right at the time where he's, you know, really lending himself, you know, wholeheartedly to her.
In a pretty risky way, too, right? The same party and everything, you know.
Exactly.
It's not like there's any real, you know.
But it's really, it's relationship suicide. Like, people do that in order to, like, you like a person and you're with them, but you don't know how to get out of the relationship. You don't have, like, the nerve to, like, pull the plug. So people just do things that are so egregious that it just precludes you from continuing. So I feel like that drives a lot of people to just cheat or do something, you know, so bad that it's, there's no going back. So I feel like she's exactly that. Like, to kiss your best friend's, your boyfriend's best friend at the party when your best friend's there, like, you've got to be pushed all the way to the limit. But then at the same time, she's not ready to say no. So she's put it on this romantic spot, and either she just gives into the moment and says yes, or just from my own experience, I've been so wrong in judging people's the success of their relationship, thinking like when they get together, and I'm like, there's no way this couple's gonna last more than a month, 2 months, and then now they've been together for 10 years, and I'm like, and then conversely, the couple that seems so happy, all of a sudden it turns out that there's really dark things going on beneath the surface. And so, you know, I feel like in all likelihood, she's young, she's in the situation, he's pining after her, it's kind of based on what really happened in her life, and so he's kind of clinging to it even harder than he would otherwise. And so, in a way, they've reversed position. So Wilson's kind of privy to how their relationship's going to go through some rocky times.
I mean, you guys are co-collaborators in many respects, and right? I mean, so did you have any significant disagreement about something that was about the...
The church.
What?
One day that you came home. This one day Alex came home and he had this idea that we...
Because it happened to him that day.
Yeah. It was the experience, and that was the only thing, but it wasn't even a disagreement. He came and he told us all it, and we were like...
And then he left.
And then we looked at each other, and we were like, and then we called him, and he was like, yeah, I know.
No, you had gone downtown, and you had this crazy experience in this church.
It was morning, like before we even got there, so we got at like 7 o'clock in the morning. But it wasn't even a disagreement, it was just an idea. Mm. And that we were like, I don't know.
But other than that, I mean, we were on top of everything. I mean, all of Alex's ideas, we loved everything.
And if we had ideas, we just do them. If you didn't like them, we just cut them out of the movie.
But the main thing, the only thing I think we had to struggle with as far as writing and getting location was the theater scene. Like, that was rewritten quite a few times. And then different ideas were put into it, and then, you know, it was really hard to get that location to shoot in and this and that. But that was the only thing that I remember having a difficult time. And because that was a very important point of the film, because it was when Vivian was finally maybe revealing herself, she finally takes the glasses off, which he always wanted at that point, and then it's when they maybe start to have somewhat of a connection where it's like people have let their guards down, they're in a safe place. For whatever reason, this theater, this stage makes them feel okay about it. So it needed to be pretty perfect to make that moment happen. That was the only thing I remember being kind of difficult.
I don't even think they were disagreements. It was just, we didn't really have, I mean, everything was so, like, just talked over and talked about throughout the entire process that it wasn't.
There was no nipple stuff. I mean, that's part of it. There was a thing about me being nude. Showing breast, and so that was a difficult thing to talk about, because I mean, we wanted it to be real and raw. I mean, clearly I wasn't going to have like a bra on or something, you know, because it was a raw moment for most of these people. But I did feel uncomfortable thinking that I would, you know, so that was like an uncomfortable kind of like discussion, like should this happen, should it not, and I think it came out wonderful without the nips.
Yep. What's so horrific about a guy you've met and you're getting to know admitting, you know, real soft underbelly thing here, that he jerked off to his, roommate's girlfriend?
What's that about?
What's so god-awful about it? I mean, I would not find that terribly appealing, but it's not something I would freak out about.
Because women have this idea. It's like we know that you masturbate. We know, We got an argument on
that.
We
got
just got an argument about
San Francisco.
So, no, the thing is, like, women, we understand that this goes on, right? But it's put on the back in the back of our head, like, well, they don't do it a lot, you know, and certainly they don't look at porn, and when they do, that's just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why would you do that? If
there's
you
so
at
many women
so
that look at porn, like, more than men.
And,
like,
want to
see porn, like, while they have sex.
No, yes. I'm sure if we Googled it, there's some survey that men probably masturbate
more. Yeah, because women are real honest about it.
Subject, but there is, I think there's just something, especially meeting some guy for the first time, and you're like, what is it? Tell me your secret. And you think he's going to say something like cute or weird, and he's like, I jerked off this morning to my friend's.
That is understandable.
To my friend's picture. It's like, you did. Yeah. Okay, now you're a pervert. Great. A, this morning you thought I was 17 and you wanted to have sex with me. Perfect.
Yeah.
You know? Now you're saying you jerked off to somebody you knew and created the whole picture.
We're talking in regards to the movie, but I'm talking in real life.
You wouldn't be mad because we're so much dirtier around you than that. And you don't care.
But that's me.
Okay, your character though was particularly sensitive this day because she's like trying to restore her faith in guys.
She's so pregnant, she's been cheated on, and now here's another guy who's basically, you know, masturbating to like his best friend's fiance, or whatever.
Fucking dudes.
But no, me personally in real life, I can take all the shit, but like, I think that, I don't know though, like if I was on a blind date and some guy was like, this morning I got caught jerking off to my best friend's girlfriend, I'd be like,
but he does it in such a nice way, I mean, it's
kind of
you force me to confess.
Yeah.
And he does say that the roommate's girlfriend is actually not that pissed off about it.
She actually liked it.
And I'm like, it's not a good idea. I don't know. I don't think so. So you're hammering on it.
Yeah. And here's the other thing about that whole flirtation thing, because when you're on a date and you're getting to know one another, there's this whole, there's sexual attraction. Now, as you're kind of gaining your level of confidence and you're kind of getting closer with one another, you start to kind of throw things out on a sexual level a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you kind of play this fun little flirtation game where you kind of push buttons and see how far you can go. Because you want to, it's not even conscious that you want to bring it to a sexual level so we can start talking about it. But I think it's inherent in the way we talk and the way we interact to like bring it to a place where we can get along.
I've always had this dream. I always thought the only way I could, I really wish, and of course it's impossible because the people that make porn are at best marginally talented, usually pretty untalented, including the camera people. But if someone would make a porn film in Swedish, like an Ingmar Bergman film from 1960, beautiful Sven Nykvist, you know, then it would be, that'd be interesting, you know.
But I think that porn, they want it raw. You know what I mean?
Like, for women, maybe that would be to watch a nice story happen, beautifully shot. What is wrong with that? Like you guys never talked to women before.
What are you fast for? I mean, what are you watching the porn for? A good movie?
Yeah,
for one reason.
Put you in the mood. I don't need to see vagina and penis in my face.
No, it's true though. Women's attitude about the pornography, I feel, is so much more story oriented than physical.
Romantic story.
I would love to see a black and white.
I'm in Italy and I've met Dexter the Italian kickboxer.
That would make me hot right now.
Yeah, let's make a black and white porn. Good idea.
I was very upset at the Zogby poll earlier today.
Oh, yeah.
But then another poll came out with Obama 45-42. So.
He's going to kill him as soon as we get into the debates. We got to put him side by side. He didn't have a very good month. He was a little bit out of the spotlight. He came on the attack. They hired the Karl Rove machine. Mm. It would be interesting to see how Obama's attack ads now are going to pan out.
It's just an instinct about him being too genteel, and he just kind of backpedals and soft shoes around. You know, he's not a scrapper.
Well, he definitely backpedaled on a few things that he didn't have to.
I don't mean backpedal in terms of taking things back. I mean kind of sidestepping and not, you know, avoiding being blunt, and, you know, I mean,
I think he's going to get him. I bet it, my God, if he loses all.
I just can't imagine McCain as president. I just can't see that. I mean, maybe if there's a better Republican candidate, I could maybe, but I just don't see him being president.
Well, let's hope to God he's not, but right now they're so close in the polls, though.
How many friends do you have, the three of you, who are Pretty much not going to vote, and I've said so.
Not going to vote? No.
I don't know anyone.
I don't know anyone.
Really?
That's not gonna vote. Do you?
I think that, I mean, I probably know quite a few, but I think that this year, this election will be the first election that all those people that, I didn't vote up until this year, this is the first year that I would vote. Because before I've just been like, yeah, you know, yeah. And like, and after watching the whole Bush thing that happened last time where he actually lost, but they like rearranged the ballot, was my whole speech of like, this is why you don't vote, because it doesn't matter what you vote, it's not going to matter. You know, they're going to pick whoever they want to go into office anyways and rig the votes, and so it's a waste of time anyways, why don't we just... But this year will be the first year that I'm actually going to, like, vote. And, like, the same thing with those people that I know that don't vote. This year is the first year I feel like they're coming out to vote.
The idea
that
they're
coming out to vote for Obama.
Yeah.
You know.
That people would seriously want to put it into the presidency, a guy who's never turned on a computer in his life. McCain.
He's
not completely illiterate. I mean, that is so... primal and so fundamental.
Wow.
He's way too avid. But it's crazy because none of this. I think as soon as they put them side by side, right now they're not talking with one another.
Yeah.
Just put them side by side and let's look.
Reason I asked about the voting thing is because I talked to the gang from American Teen. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But
they're from Indiana, and you know they're juniors, 20, 21, and. The two guys who were left, they're not there. They just figure it's not for us, you know. Maybe they were told don't say anything about that to when guys like me asked them during interviews, but I was amazed.
About voting?
Yeah.
What the fuck, man? There's too much, like, I feel like everybody that took a back seat before, that was just kind of like, politics, they're all phone calls, I'm not paying attention. I mean, I've always been incredibly involved in that stuff and campaigned, even though I didn't love Kerry, I mean, I campaigned on his behalf and raised money and all that shit, because these fuckers, man, you can't keep them in office. And, but then, now, after you really are like, wow, I didn't vote, or I stayed out of it, now all of a sudden we're in two wars, we're bankrupt, we have this huge mortgage crisis, we're fucked on, you know, an environmental policy, we have no energy policy. Now people are like, oh, well, maybe it does make a difference. So I feel like, you know, hopefully that resonates where people are like, if I do nothing, it's going to be more of this shit. If I do something and take a chance.
But that's why it's so appealing about Obama, is because, like, here's the first guy, and I think since I... you know, really taking risks, it's actually saying I'm going to change all this stuff, which is the only thing, it's the only thing I'm really looking forward to is not so much the next 8 years, but so much the next 40 years. And I mean, my parents are Republican, and my mom said she's voting Democratic. You know, she just hands down always votes Republican. It doesn't matter who's what. And she's voting for Obama this year because, you know, I had a long conversation with them. I was like, well, you guys have to understand that something's got to change here, because we feel like our country is falling from within, like within the
politics,
you
know.
And it's got to take, because the people, doesn't really matter. Like, I mean, it does matter, but like our voices aren't heard. People are too scared of organizations and whatever, IRS, and people that they won't speak up. So here's a guy that's out in this internally can get into control, that is actually will fight for the people and turn the country back into the people's country versus the government country. You know?
So it's incredibly smart. His policies are popular. Like, McCain's, none of the policies he actually believes in are popular. It's like, how can you run a campaign and expect to win when nothing you're actually believing you're voting for is what the majority of Americans want?
Yeah. Could you do that kind of slightly pouty thing looking down the table?
Porn.
That kind of, you know, porn. Just look over at various parts of the table with a slightly pouty thing. Because it really looks, it's really appealing, that expression on your face.
Pouty.
Yeah, that's good.
Pouty.
More pouty. Pouty at my glasses, maybe, a little bit.
Really pouty those glasses.
Do you like being taken with a smile? Are you comfortable with your smile?
Some people
are.
Can
you guys
make your own
green? Yeah. Whatever you want to do.
Let's see those teeth. See those poppy seeds.
I probably have a, whatever.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I decided in a flash, I'm sure 98% of the people who, of course, don't read reviews, don't read columns, don't go online to check out. They just go because their heart tells them to go is the photography. That was immediately. I said, that's it. I'm going to see it. You know? Is that what most people have said to you? Or do they... word of mouth? What's the decision?
It's weird because we came out in the UK first. So we came out in June 13th in the UK, and it's done very well. We had a really aggressive, hardcore company behind it. So all of a sudden we're flown all over the UK. There's posters everywhere, and it did amazing box office because they pushed it. You know, they got good reviews and good word of mouth. And then we just came out in Greece with a similar kind of a thing. And I don't know, in Europe it's so different. Here everything's so corporatized that even getting it out there is such... You're fighting against Sony, whereas in Europe there's younger, feistier companies can put up a fearless little plane. Here we can't even put up a poster. The studios hire people to tear down our posters. It's like the only way we even have a voice is by you writing about it. That's our only chance. Like, we're literally having to chalk on the streets because, we're no joke.
Every single avenue of marketing or advertising that we've attempted here, we've been either had a lawsuit or something's been taken against us. So the only thing we've resorted to is we chalk till 6 in the morning every night in front of coffee shops, all over Los Feliz, Hollywood, Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, everywhere. Midnight Kiss, it opens Friday. MidnightKissMovie.com.
That's why it's so important for us, for you to write, because it's the only chance of having a voice outside the system. Otherwise, these movies get wheeled into existence. Every bus, every TV, every wild posting that looks like a punk rock is all contrived by an advertiser.
It's been rented.
Really? I didn't know that they did that.
Because we started putting up our posters, then they started tearing them down. They would I'd run up and there'd be some guy with a razor blade razoring them down. We'd be like, what the fuck? Who are you? And he'd be like, I work for NPA, this company that all the studios hire.
So there is no wild posting. I somehow was not aware of that.
It's all been monopolized by one fucking company.
So they go to this construction company and pay them X amount of dollars to allow them to post posters there. And then even if we post on the side where there's no posters, we own that whole piece of plywood. Where can we put them now? They know it.
In the United States, getting those voices out. And then you have 2 weeks to perform or you're gone, at most. One week. So it's not like the early 90s where you have this room to grow, much more like Europe is. Because
So there are no buys on television for this, right?
We don't even know. I don't know. You mean TV ads?
I don't even know what you shot it in. Did you shoot it in Super 16 or 30?
No, we shot on HD and then transferred to film.
Really? Oh, somehow I got the idea that it was shot on
celluloid.
We shot it in
celluloid.
What would it have cost if you had shot it at, say, 16? Super 16?
We couldn't have done it because we would have needed more light. Just the amount of light we'd have plug in.
Yeah.
So under these conditions, we could shoot in places, we could open up the aperture to 1/3, we could do things that would push the grain a little bit, but it would allow us to capture a deeper frame at night that we could never expose under 16. We'd have to 1600 speed.
I'm never quite sure if I'm seeing a film under its, the best conditions, but I really can't wait to see this on Blu-ray or some kind of HD.
Can't wait,
it's going to be really beautiful.
I hope they do the black and white HD.
Yeah.
Did you see on a DVD or on a film print?
I saw it at a Wilshire screening room, which is, I don't know how they projected it. I don't know.
Wilshire screening room or the Fine Arts Theater on Wilshire?
No, there's a press screening. I don't know which one it is, but I really like the film.
Are they projecting it digitally? Is that how I saw it?
It depends. They have both. They have an HD projection and a 35mm print. Mm. So.
But everything in the theaters is 35.
Yeah, it's but there's a few theaters that'll show HD. So far, everything I've seen has been a print.
So how many people say that they see this as another in the vein of a Richard Linklater film? How many people are telling you that?
Too many people, but in Europe,
I didn't really see it. I thought it was more your own thing.
I'm friends with Rick. It's not like he's not an influence on me, but it's I feel like Yeah, it's two people walking and talking. Yeah, in the middle it's kind of like that, but the beginning is nothing like it. The end is nothing like it. The overall arc is, I could mention 10 other films that were, you know.
People tend to say it, I'm sure, because it says on there from the executive producer of Days Confused and Before Sunset. Mm-hmm. So they automatically think, oh, well, it's just, you know. But had that not been on there, I think less people would have, like, made the relationship between the two.
I like that Paris one, actually, slightly better, the second one.
2 days in Paris? Or Before Sunset?
Whatever the second one was.
Yeah.
You see that? I love the ending of that second one. It blew me away. The entire film, to see that ending where he's like, she's like, you're going to miss your flight. And he says, I know. And then it just...
Yeah.
That got me. It was worth watching them talk and walk for 2 hours for that.
Yeah, it was an amazing movie.
Then they get on the plane and a porn starts, and that would have been the best porn you've ever seen.
Do you know that they totally rewrote that ending? Because Rick, Ethan, and Julie had written a draft before, and then they couldn't get the funding for it. This was a few years before, and it ended where they got married at the end.
Oh.
And then the script wasn't right, and so as a result, they got to take a break and then went back and did another pass and then came up with that ending.